Do you know what time it is? It's supernatural story time. And if you're easily scared, and even if you're not, there's only one thing left to do. Just turn off the lights, because these are stories that you listen to only in the dark. Tales from the Road, Volume 10, Story 1. The story I'm going to tell you is to warn you, to educate you. You need to understand something. I don't know what I saw, but I do know that I never want to see it again. And I'm warning you, don't go out looking for it, please. I live and attend college in a small mountain town in Colorado, but often go home to see families. Most of them live in Texas, and I'm rather attached to visiting my cat. Now, in order to get home, I have to make most of my drive through New Mexico, specifically through Santa Fe, and about 160 miles through the charmingly bare New Mexico desert, which, if you aren't familiar with it, don't try to get acquainted with it. Or, if you're planning to head out there, I hope this story will change your mind. On this particular drive, I had three other people with me, my younger sister, Andrea, and two friends from school, Jess and Kate. It was our spring break, and instead of buying stupidly priced plane tickets, we decided to pile into my little Mercury Mariner and book it back to Texas. Unfortunately, we left the valley a little later than intended due to someone, it was me, forgetting their wallet. So by the time we hit the stretch of desert, it was close to 1 a.m. It had been raining since before we headed through Santa Fe. Not super heavy, but heavy enough. It was 65 degrees. I remember that quite clearly because I'd been in negatives for quite a while due to where I go to school. So I was pleased to see something over 5 degrees. For this next part of the story, I need you to understand something. I hadn't been driving that long. I was awake. I did not hallucinate this, and I damn sure wasn't the only one who saw it. Please believe me. We passed a white Prius, and as he was driving away, I looked at my rear view and saw something crossing the road, caught in the red glow of the taillights. It was walking with a horrible limp and dragging itself across the road on two legs. The motions were unnatural, jerky even. I slammed on my brakes, thinking someone had driven off the road and was stuck or injured. I slid to a stop about 20 feet away from it. The Prius had stopped as well, seeing the person in the road. I opened my door and stuck my head out in the rain to get a better view. It wasn't human. It stopped, its figure illuminated by the taillights of both of our cars. It had to have been at least 7 feet tall, possibly 8. The skin was stretched like a too small shirt, cracking, hanging off its frame in long, bloody ribbons. The jaw was almost totally unhinged from its face. The cheekbones gaunt and disgusting. The skin on the scalp was thin and spots of bloody white stuck out. And the smell. Jesus, I'd never smelled anything like it. As soon as I opened the door, it hit me. Rotting flesh. Meat that has been left out for months. Rotten milk. The kind of stuff nightmares are made of. The Prius took off, squealing its tires into the night. But I stayed. Fight or flight hadn't kicked in yet for me. This thing couldn't have been more than 20 feet away. It slowly turned its head, each vertebrae in the neck individually cracking like effing bubble wrap. We made eye contact. But it had no eyes, only darkness. I slammed my car door and sped off. At this point, my friends had all awoken and seen it. Kate was in the back and hysterical. Jess was silent, her mouth set into a grim white line. My sister Andrea just sat with a look of horror, tears silently streaming down her face. My friend kept screaming, "What the F was that? What was that? Alex!" I didn't know what to tell her. I just kept driving, my hands gripping the wheel as we broke 80 miles an hour. Then something happened that I still to this day cannot explain. The temperature had dropped during the whole event. It was 30 degrees out. It had been 65 degrees no more than 5 minutes before. It then began to snow. Hard, heavy, wet snow. We ended up pulling over at a gas station called Klein's Corner. No one moved. Andrea was crying. Jess was praying. Kate was cursing and I was shaking violently. "What the F just happened?" Kate said. All color drained from her face. I looked at her, my face tight with fear. "I don't know. I don't want to know. But we need to leave." I slowly put the car into drive and continued our trip. The rest of the drive was unmemorable. Everything was fine. We reached Texas by 6 a.m. Nothing else happened. I don't know what it could have been. The closest I could come to was a skinwalker. Maybe it was a shapeshifter that had a bad change. I don't know. Please, please believe me when I tell you this. I'm not crazy. And I know what I saw. Don't go looking for it. Don't follow it because it might follow you back. Story number two. It was 1995. I just graduated high school and an old friend who I haven't talked to in 7 years now and I were hanging out and I said, "Let's go to New Orleans." And we did. We had $140 between us and back then that was more than enough. We made it to New Orleans. Almost died from culture shock and turned around and headed to Magnolia, Mississippi to get some sleep. We stayed at Magnolia and it was a shithole, but it was nice and cool. It was May or June in South Mississippi. Cool was the only adjective that mattered. We stayed up that night playing poker, drinking Gordon's vodka, and talking about who knows what. Probably girls, college, and college girls. At some point, I said, "Ever been to Texas?" "Nope." "Pack your bag and let's roll." We had a road atlas. Marshall, Texas was right across the border from Shreveport. We arrived in Shreveport, made a phone call to another friend who we were actually supposed to be staying with. Both of our mothers had called looking for us. The only person that knew where we were was the buddy on the phone. It was no big deal. We would be home in a day or two. I'm being short on details because if I don't, this will turn into a novel-length story about chasing armadillos and being chased by the boogeyman. Before we left that rest area in Shreveport, where we made the call, we saw an armadillo. Let me tell you something about armadillos. Those bastards will hiss, jump, and turn into Tasmanian devils if you corner them. They also carry leprosy. We were 18. We chased that armadillo around for an hour. Now, let me tell you about Shreveport. I don't know how it is now, but in the summer of 1995, it looked and smelled like a place where oil and metal went to die. It was dirty. It was a shithole. We crossed a bridge and saw people fishing 100 yards from where a drainage pipe from a factory was spewing forth waste upriver from the fishermen. The locals reminded me of the locals in Adamsville, bald-headed women and cross-eyed men. A lot of bald-headed, cross-eyed kids. I'm sorry, but it was a Rob Zombie movie come to life. I felt like I was going to be raped because I had a full head of hair and could see straight. The best part of Shreveport was an armadillo that might possibly have leprosy. Marshall, Texas was 40 miles away. We rolled on. Marshall was a decent little town. Home of the Fire Ant Festival. We stopped at a little barbecue joint and had a Coke, a smile, and some pulled pork. It was getting late and the sun was setting. We looked at the map and decided to backtrack a bit and head up rural route 43 through Carmack and past Cattle Lake. We would eventually run into Highway 59, head to Texarkana, and then head back home. When we left the barbecue joint and headed towards 43, it was dusk. Highway 43 wasn't well lit. It was almost as dark as Natchez Trace Parkway. I've got a good story about using a pair of pantyhose as a fan belt for an old diesel Mercedes. Do not ever get stuck on the trace after dark. Ever. My friend was driving and we were doing about 45 miles an hour. Any faster would have been reckless, even for a couple of 18-year-olds, dumbasses. This road was kind of like Christmasville Road. The locals reading this will know what I mean. The non-locals just have to use your imagination. It was dark, winding, full of hills that ended in curves. There were beady and slowing eyes on both sides of the road. You could hear the crickets and the bullfrogs over the sound of the wild rushing by that old Sentra. It was peaceful and creepy at the same time. The humidity was a real thing, tangible. The air was thick. It smelled like pastures, hay, and swamp. We drove for what seemed like hours. It was after midnight, and I saw a sign that informed me that Bivens was the next town of any size. I was hypnotized by the yellow lines in the road. We hadn't seen another car in at least an hour. Sleepy. I rolled the window down and lit a cigarette. There was music coming from the radio, the tape player. It was either Tupac or Bob Seger. I smoked my cigarette, absentmindedly flicking ashes out of the window. I took one last puff and flicked the camel short off into the woods. Then I saw it. I never looked to my right. I didn't even kind of peek to the right. Maybe I did a little when I flicked a cigarette away. I don't know. What I do know is that in my periphery there was something running alongside the car. It was just behind my window, behind where the edge of the door ends and before where the back window begins. I looked over at the speedometer, 40 miles per hour. I looked at my friend. He was looking straight ahead. I looked straight ahead. I could still see it. I could see one huge arm, matted hair, reddish brown, sticky looking, primal. I eased my right hand over and rolled up my window. My friend was still looking straight ahead. His jaw was clenched, and as he put both hands on the wheel, he sped up. No words were said. I looked straight ahead, and still out of my periphery, I could see that arm moving, muscles and tendons visibly rippling beneath the matted hair. As a car gained a little speed, the thing running alongside us lost pace slightly. I then saw the hand on the end of that nightmarish arm. The hand was clenched into a fist the size of a cantaloupe. A big cantaloupe. It was covered in the same hair, but slightly darker around the fingers, like it was stained with something. Suddenly the hand unclenched, and then I saw the claws, black as this damn after midnight Texas night. Those claws were at least 2 inches long, sharp, like an animal's. This wasn't a hand so much as it was the killing paw and claws of some beast whose only purpose was to kill and eat. I looked back at my friend. I looked at the speedometer, 50 miles an hour. I looked straight ahead. It was still there. I lit another cigarette, didn't roll the window down, and simply said, "Shit." The music had stopped. I finally broke the silence and said, "Hey, do you?" And before I could finish, my buddy said, "I see it. I've been seeing it. I can't even see you, but I can see whatever the hell that shit is." "How much do you see it?" "More than I want to." "Speed up, John. Just speed up. It can't keep up forever." I looked over, 55 miles an hour. Whatever was chasing us silently was starting to lag behind. I finally looked to my right, just a bit. Imagine the scary part of the movie where you put your hands in front of your face but still peek through. In 37 years, I have 2 regrets. One is picking up that first cigarette, and the other is me looking to my right that night. This beast was huge. Its chest was above the top of the car, and all I could see was that matted reddish brown hair. Then it bent forward as it ran. I saw the face of this thing. All reality stopped. We were no longer driving down some country road in Texas. We were now trying to escape from the depths of a monster that inhabited hell. This thing's face is beyond my powers to describe. It was evil. The eyes were black and the pupils were red. It flashed its teeth at me in a snarl, yellow and huge. Saliva dripped from its mouth. It opened its eyes wide, and it looked hungry and pissed off. Then it opened its mouth. The skin pulled back until all you could see were black gums and yellow teeth. Immediately, I could feel the car accelerate. "Effing hell, John, just go," I prayed. I cussed. I lit a cigarette. Then, like sunshine breaking through the clouds, the road straightened out. "Don't you slow down." We drove through Bivens and we drove to Texarkana. Then we drove home. We never said a word. It was years later, 11 to be exact, before we even talked about it again. And we didn't talk much about it. He said he'd never told anyone, and I hadn't either. I told the story a few years back for the first time while I was parked out on a gravel road, doing the things you do when you're parked out on a gravel road with a good-looking woman. I told it a year or so ago to a couple of kids who wanted to hear a scary story while they sat around a campfire. They didn't sleep for a day or two, but they asked me a dozen more times to tell them the story. I never told anyone until now that I saw its face. I've been scared for my life exactly two times. Once was on that road and once was looking at a grizzly bear in front of me with a terminal velocity inducing drop to the side of me. Call it what you will, call it bullshit if you want, but look me in the eyes and let me tell you this story and you'll know. Never doubt that there are things in this world that defy explanation and logic. The boogeyman is real. Some 16 or 17 years after this happened, I ran across a story in a movie called The Legend of Boggy Creek, Folk, Arkansas, where the aforementioned story and movie takes place. Isn't that far from Bivens, Texas, as a crow flies? And let me tell you, you can invite me over, buy me a beer, sit on the porch with me, and I'll tell you the story over a pack of Marlboros and a few of those beers. Story number 3. I was born and raised in a small town called Chinle. Chinle is nestled deep in the arid mountains of Northeast Navajo Nation in the northeast corner of Arizona. While many Arizona small towns embody some sort of nostalgic American feel, this cannot be said for any town on the reservation. The reservation, Chinle included, was rife with poverty, alcoholism, abuse, and social isolation. It's the closest you can get to hell within the United States. So perhaps it isn't any wonder that after buying vodka from a friend at the age of 16, I was merely wandering the outskirts of the town, taking swigs of vodka. My father was abusive, my mother dead. I had no real reason to return home for the night, nor did my father have any reason to care if I returned. I had a bottle of vodka in one hand and a gun in my jacket pocket in the off chance some shit went down, as it tends to on the res. The night would have been memorable even without my petrifying and life-changing experience, as it was a frigid March night, temperatures below freezing. A light dusting of snow was falling from the pitch-dark night sky. That's the one benefit of the Navajo nations. Clear night skies, but it's truly akin to finding one diamond and 50 acres of shit. I walked in a lackadaisical fashion alongside a two-lane road, a rural road on which few ever drove. I heard rustling noises in the bushes to the left and spotted a coyote. I shrugged it off. I had dozens of encounters with coyotes in my life. I had no reason to fear it. I took another swig of vodka and continued walking, hoping I could reach the state line by 1 a.m. The crisp night air seemed to accelerate into a much more frigid, windy atmosphere. Something felt off. Something felt deeply ominous in an unsettling way. I glanced to my left again. The coyote, which must have been 25 yards from me prior, was now about 10 yards away from me and slowly walking in my direction. Perhaps it's hostile, I thought to myself. Regardless, I remained largely apathetic, though I'd be lying if I said I didn't have a little bit of fear at this point. 30 seconds later, I'm still walking down the road. The coyote is within 30 feet of me, keeping pace with me. It didn't seem outwardly hostile from a cursory glance. It just appeared as if it was following me, as if I had a nice slab of steak in my back pocket. I kept an eye turned to the coyote. I was growing deeply concerned. A drop of icy sweat dripped past my brow. The wind only grew stronger and the coyote closer. I considered my options and quickly realized that I could get effed over this if I didn't act. Seeing as I was the track star of the Chinle High School prior to my expulsion, I leaped forward at a rapid pace and simply ran for it. I bolted. I hauled ass. I sprinted. The coyote remained walking momentarily, as if he didn't want to bother some drunken teenager sprinting through a frigid desert. Then the coyote rapidly picked up his pace and within seconds was a mere few feet behind me. The facade of passiveness in the coyote's eyes had vanished. I saw pure hatred. I swore its eyes were yellow. I swear it. I had never seen anything like it in my life. Absolutely frightened, I smashed a bottle of vodka across its skull when it came no more than a foot behind me. While the coyote was wounded, I wasn't fooling around. I continued running. I paused for a second and continued running. The glass was easily lodged within the coyote's head. I looked back and saw a pool of blood formulating on the icy road. I looked forward, then again looked back, and did a double take. The coyote no longer had a wound on its head, and it was again running full force towards me. So, I did something that is completely illegal on the reservation, something worse than bootlegging alcohol at the age of 16. I pulled out my grandfather's old pistol I carried and fired a shot. I missed. I tried again. Missed again. The coyote's again feet behind me, snarling something violent as if it's trying to communicate. The ominous silence had vanished. The coyote was enraged and inhuman. A third shot, this time it landed in the coyote's head yet again. Wounded yet again. And you better believe I didn't stop to celebrate. I had seen what this bastard was capable of. I dropped my pistol and ran and ran. Then I saw the headlights. Headlights. I frantically stood in the middle of the road, motioning towards the oncoming car, tempted to stop him. Most Navajo don't pick up hitchhikers for safety precautions, so I was going to force this guy to let me in. Within 10 seconds, the man driving the vehicle came to a screeching halt, almost slipping on the black ice. I stood by the passenger door, and he reluctantly rolled down his window. "Let me in! There's a fucking coyote that's chasing me! I'm not a delinquent, I swear, please, sir, trust me." He simply nodded his head and let me inside the vehicle. He must have been drunk, I figured. As I took deep, long breaths, as I buckled my seatbelt and I gazed into the rearview mirror of the automobile, driven by a silent, drunk Navajo man, the coyote was running behind us, easily going faster than 30 miles an hour, maybe 40 miles an hour. The man took notice of this and began speeding up. "Kid, is this what chased you?" he said in an incomprehensible slur. That's when it hit me. This wasn't a coyote. The faster it ran, I began to see it. Antlers? A pelt on its head? Wait, his head? The four-legged creature was now on its hind legs. Wait, no. Where did his other two legs go? The driver glanced at me and locked eyes with me. "Skinwalker," he said calmly. "That is a skinwalker." "I will drive fast now," he said. 60 miles per hour, it followed. 65 miles per hour, it followed. Once we reached a magical 80 miles per hour, in his beat-up Toyota, the creature was no longer visible in the rearview mirror. The driver chuckled in a drunken fashion and said, "Huh, skinwalkers and tourists who come here and say it's just folklore." Next story. This story belongs to a friend of mine. He told me this once, and I simply have to tell it. My friend is of Wukunav heritage, a Native American tribe who settled the Pacific Northwest coast. He's quite the character. For one, he is a whopping 6 feet 10 inches tall and has the blackest eyes you could imagine. He always has this frowning face going on, which makes him even more intimidating. He is everything but a bad guy. In fact, he is the most gentle of giants. He was working at a gas station up north back in 1992, and he pretty much always worked a graveyard shift from 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. when he was relieved. Business wasn't exactly booming at night, so he was usually watching TV or reading magazines between customers, and they were few. The area he lived and worked in was deeply associated with all things Native American. There was a potent sense of pride in the surrounding communities, but also a very distinct presence of superstition and old traditions. My friend was no exception. He was a firm believer of the ways of the old. This made his encounter even more terrifying. One night, he was sitting as usual watching TV when a customer entered the gas station. The customer paid for his gas, a pack of smokes and some soda, and returned to his car. Nothing unusual. But as my friend looked out the window towards the customer's car, he spotted what looked like a huge dog sitting by the edge of the woods. Now, the window is located on the side of the building, some distance from the sliding door, overlooking the pumps and the roof covering it. On the sides of the roof are pretty strong halogen lights which shine into the gas station. This gives the gas station not only an eerie lighting with the blinds casting long striped shadows, but also blinds the teller to an extent. As he peered through the window, trying to focus on the dog, it was gone. He didn't think much of it. Even if it was a wolf, he was inside and wolves don't tend to rob gas stations at night. Wolves were common here, but this wolf was huge. He brushed it off and returned to his mindless watching of the TV. A couple of hours go by and not a single customer has entered since the last one. He was just about to refill some condiments when he heard a large thud coming from the back. It wasn't inside. He could hear that. But it seemed to come from the back behind the building where they keep the garbage. The gas station had been visited before by scavenging homeless, but my friend didn't really care. It wasn't his garbage, and it was just garbage. Let them take it. But it kept getting noisier. He decided to grab a flashlight and a gun from the office and circle around the back to tell whoever ventured there to leave, as he'd had enough. His presence alone would have scared off anyone, but he wanted to feel safe just in case. He exited through the sliding doors, walking past the window he was just sitting by. As he turned the corner, he shone the light towards the dumpsters. As the cone of light hits the dumpster, my friend instantly drops the flashlight and the gun. It's the huge dog he saw before, scouring through the garbage. It wasn't a dog, though. It clearly stood on its hind legs, reaching the same height as himself. It couldn't be a bear, as it was too gaunt. The creature's eyes had been glowing in the light of the flashlight, making it even more terrifying. He ran inside the gas station, and he wasn't followed. He locked the door, stayed inside the whole night, and quit the next day. My friend's still convinced that he saw a skinwalker, a shape-shifting shaman of sorts that are a common occurrence in Native American lore and culture. But then, maybe it was just a plain old dog man. Next story. I'm Navajo, and I've heard a lot of stories growing up on the reservation. While I've never seen anything myself, which I'm grateful for, I have benefited by being around the people who have. There's a different kind of evil that exists in the quiet high deserts and deep sandstone canyons of Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, even Colorado, in the southern Ute area. I can only describe it as an ancient evil. Now, there are helpful ceremonies, rituals, and traditions that are still practiced to this day. Hell, even a local hospital has an on-duty medicine man. But it seems to be a double-edged sword. What I mean is there's also black magic, which most will not even acknowledge or speak of. We are very superstitious and are heavy with taboos. You'll find this with most First Nation people, from Alaska to Argentina. It's just something you don't do, in fear that it will get the attention of unwanted spirits or harmful things. Skinwalkers are just a few stories that kept me up at night with the covers all over my head. Here's a quick one for you. A Navajo tribal police officer was driving west on what used to be officially named Highway 666. It was lightly snowing, maybe a quarter inch, which is a lot of snow for home, and he sees an old woman walking on the side of the road. How she got there or where she was going was not apparent because she was so far out in the middle of nowhere. He didn't see her right away, but as he passes, he noticed that she's dressed in traditional clothing, a shawl, dress, moccasins, and her hair in a traditional bun. Not too odd. Many elders still choose to dress traditionally, but why was she out in such cold weather this late at night? Hitchhiking, maybe? He passed her too quickly and now had to turn around, and as he made a U-turn, he noticed she's nowhere to be seen. This is fairly flat terrain, and he for sure could see an old woman walking. He pulled a squad car over and stepped out with his flashlight. Confused, he managed to find the woman's footprints in the shallow snow. He followed the footprints until they suddenly turned into what looked like dog footprints, leading away from the road in a hurry. He immediately jumped back into the squad car and met up with another officer near his patrol. He was a little shaken up, but asked the other officer if he had ever seen anything like that. The officer told him that he had. He also explained that sometimes it's an old woman, sometimes a very beautiful young girl, but always on that road and always in the snow, waiting for the right Good Samaritan to let her get into their car. I still get nervous driving down those open, wide spaces at night. I keep my eyes strictly on the road and turn my music up high. I rarely pick up hitchhikers, but I never pick them up at night.